Hello, and welcome back to another episode of The Tempo, the official podcast of the Kappa Kappa Psi Alumni Association. We are your hosts, Sav,
Mark,
and Tori. To start off this episode, we would like to give a quick shout out to our guest from last month's episode, Brother David Duplessis. If you haven't listened to last month's episode, we encourage you to go check out our Legacy and Harmony Celebrating Black History with the Delta Alpha Alumni Association. Today we're celebrating Women's History Month with conversations highlighting the experiences of women in the fraternity. We'll reference the article Women in the Fraternity from the Podium, April 18th, 2012 was when it was published, and the Kappa Kappa Psi timeline available to all brothers. And have in-depth conversations with myself and Sav about our journeys as women in the fraternity.
So let's start with what is Women's History Month? So Women's History Month began as a week-long celebration in Sonoma, California in 1978, featuring school presentations, an essay contest, and a parade. The idea quickly spread, leading President Jimmy Carter to declare the week of March 8th as National Women's History Week in 1980. Congress formalized the observance the following year, and by 1987, it expanded to the entire month of March. Today, it honors the often overlooked contributions of women throughout U.S. history, from Abigail Adams to Rosa Parks. And in Kappa Kappa Psi, Title IX, enacted in 1972, required organizations to eliminate gender-based exclusion, impacting Kappa Kappa Psi as a recognition society. At the 1973 National Convention, the fraternity amended its constitution to specify that active, alumni, inactive, and life members be male, allowing women only as honorary members. However, pressure from institutions led to further discussions at the 1975 convention, where a joint committee with Tau Beta Sigma explored a corporate merger. While the merger was rejected in 1977, Kappa Kappa Psi voted to remove gender restrictions, allowing women full membership. The first women to join were Sisters of the Sigma chapter at Arizona State University, merging with the Beta Omicron chapter after a unanimous vote.
For the first half of this episode, we will be citing an article published on April 18th, 2012 in the Podium called Women in the Fraternity. There are four parts to this article, so we will be pushing these conversations and dissecting these articles to the best of our ability. An author's note, this is the first in a four-part series chronicling the history of women in Kappa Kappa Psi. Special thanks to Steve Nelson, Ken Corbett, Deb Eakins, Marie Burley, Rick Albani, Beth Smith, Ralph Sicelli, Jackie Fisk, Mu Upsilon Alpha, and the National Headquarters staff for their help on this project. So, a summary of part one. Before World War II, most band programs were male only and military in style, which led to Kappa Kappa Psi facing membership struggles when many members went to fight. This caused 90% of chapters to shut down, with the fraternity's survival largely due to a few dedicated members. The war also opened opportunities for women in band programs, and in 1944, Tau Beta Sigma petitioned to join Kappa Kappa Psi as an auxiliary chapter, though the idea didn't come to fruition. By 1946, Tau Beta Sigma was chartered as a separate sister organization. Prominent members like Max Mitchell believed that Kappa Kappa Psi should eventually open to women, recognizing the changing dynamics of college bands. The 1972 Rutgers incident pushed the issue further, as the university mandated co-ed participation in all campus organizations due to Title IX. In response, Alpha Phi at Rutgers admitted women into their chapter, defying Kappa Kappa Psi's constitution, and this led to their suspension. Despite this, the chapter formed Mu Upsilon Alpha, a co-ed service fraternity. While the National Council attempted to address the issue at the 1973 convention, Mu Upsilon Alpha continued to thrive independently, highlighting the growing momentum for gender inclusivity in band programs and service organizations.
For the second part of the article, the passage of Title IX in 1972, which prohibited discrimination based on sex in educational organizations receiving federal funds, significantly impacted male-only honor societies like Cap Kappa Psi. The law prompted the fraternity to reconsider its membership policy, as Title IX would require the inclusion of women. At the 1973 National Convention in Storrs, Connecticut, this issue was at the forefront of discussions. The Grand Council emphasized the importance of full participation from all members to address this legal challenge. The National Student Advisory Committee, led by the National Member at Large, invited members to express their views on women joining the fraternity, and National Executive Secretary Robert Rubin raised critical questions about how the fraternity would navigate this change. Despite these discussions, some members resisted altering the Constitution. A proposal to amend the Constitution to remove the male language from membership requirements was introduced, but it was met with resistance and ultimately defeated by the voting body. Instead, a compromise was reached, allowing women to join as honorary members, but closing the door on full membership for women at that time. As the pressure from Title IX continued, many chapters across the country, including those at Oklahoma State University, the Georgia Institute of Technology, and the University of Connecticut, found themselves at risk of losing their university affiliations due to non-compliance with the law. The issue was revisited at the 1975 National Convention in Houston, where Grand President Thomas Tyra emphasized the importance of complying with Title IX to avoid legal repercussions. A joint committee between Kappa Kappa Psi and Tau Beta Sigma was proposed to investigate the possibility of merging the two organizations as a potential solution to ensure compliance with the law. However, as the discussion evolved, the fraternity's leadership and membership recognized that merging the two organizations was not the best solution. By the 1977 National Convention at the University of California, the pressure to comply with Title IX had reached a breaking point. The National Student Advisory Committee made several recommendations, including removing gender-specific language from the National Constitution and restructuring both Kappa Kappa Psi and Tau Beta Sigma to align their fee structures and hierarchies. This restructuring was seen as a way to create a more inclusive environment without fully merging the two organizations. Ultimately, at the 1977 convention, after much debate and discussion, the fraternity voted to remove all gender references from the Constitution. This decision was made to ensure compliance with Title IX and allow women to become active members of Kappa Kappa Psi for the first time. Although the merger with Tau Beta Sigma was rejected, the Kappa Kappa Psi vote was 211 against and 9-4. The Tau Beta Sigma vote was 104 against and 4-4. The removal of gender-specific language from the Constitution represented a significant milestone in the fraternity's history, making it fully inclusive and constitutionally compliant with federal law. This change opened the door for women to join Kappa Kappa Psi in full and regular standing, marking a new era for the organization and solidifying its commitment to gender equality.
It's kind of cool.
That was a mouthful.
What do you think about that section? Yeah. It seemed like a lot of back and forth.
Yeah.
But like,
it is mildly interesting that both organizations voted against it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, both KSI and Tau Beta both said, we don't want it. It's interesting to me.
Yeah, I can only imagine, like, what the conversations in that room were.
Yeah.
Revisiting it from every other convention. Yeah,
I can't remember who it was. There was a workshop, I guess, a workshop might not be the right word, like more discussion based, big room event kind of thing, mm-hmm. at NatCon last convention that
right.
was, based on, I think it was like race more so than mm-hmm. it was about, gender, but, she was one of the first women to become a brother, like an active mm-hmm. brother. And she said that she was one of the people at that convention when that became, or when they were arguing about it. And it was, I think she said that like there was like full on like screaming matches about it because people were really heated. But yeah. I might be totally misremembering how she talked mm-hmm. about it, but that's yeah, one of the things I have wild. Heard. Yeah.
Yeah. We're coming up on what? 45, yeah, just about 50 years on that.
Mm-hmm. Which is crazy to think about, like, 50 years isn't really that long in the grand mm-mm. scheme of things.
No.
Like, it's just crazy to think, like, you know, like my dad was born in 72. So it's like when you think like your parents and like their time, like, you know, women couldn't be in the fraternity and stuff at that time. It's just really interesting to like put it into perspective of like time.
Right. In 1976, both the Beta Omicron chapter of Kappa Kappa Psi and the Sigma chapter of Tau Beta Sigma at Arizona State University faced declining membership and increasing tension between the two groups. With only a few active members remaining, the chapters, under the guidance of Dr. Robert Fleming, decided to merge, with the exception of their rituals. By January 1977, the two chapters requested permission from national officers to fully merge. The decision was influenced by the growing recognition that joint efforts between the two chapters led to greater productivity and reduced internal conflict. The women of the Sigma chapter voted to become members of Kappa Kappa Psi after the 1977 National Convention, where the National Constitution was amended to remove gender restrictions. The merger culminated in the initiation of 8 women into the Beta Omicron chapter on August 26th and 27th, 1977. These women, Patricia A. Childress, Lydia L. Lennon, Leslie A. Anderson, Mary L. Dufala, Mary M. Ketcherer, Christina M. Zipsinis, Clara M. Bertilson, and Toni Ryan marked the first active women in the fraternity. The merger was a success, with the first election resulting in a female president, secretary, and historian, and the chapter quickly grew in membership. As a quick aside, I've mentioned on here before that we the Beta Omicron chapter has a tradition of learning about this every year for the membership that comes in, right? And some of those names are very familiar. So Leslie Anderson is the one who leads that class, usually that chapter. And we walk up a mountain, which is the local landmark. And she gives that this summarized version of this tale. And then I've also seen other names that I just listed on Facebook a lot, and they contribute a lot to our like groups and all that. So it's kind of wild seeing like their names down in history for something that they were around when it's a little closer to home than I realize even. But going on. In 1976, at Wichita State University, Darrah Hill Young became the first woman to be initiated into Kappa Kappa Psi at the Beta Tau chapter after enduring a hazing experience that was different from the treatment received by male pledges. The decision to admit women into Kappa Kappa Psi at Wichita State was initially met with resistance, but was ultimately influenced by the need to comply with Title IX. Young's initiation in September of 1977 followed just 5 days after the Arizona State merger. And the article also recounts that the experiences of women in Kappa Kappa Psi at West Virginia University, where the Omicron chapter began recruiting women in 1978. Despite initial hesitation and opposition from some members, the women, including Deb Eakins and Marie Burley, went on to hold leadership positions, with Eakins being elected as District 9 Member-at-Large in 1980. Their contributions helped pave the way for the eventual acceptance of women as full members, and the National Fraternity voted in 1989 to officially refer to all members as brothers, regardless of gender.
It's kind of, like, crazy, a little side note on that, it's kind of crazy to hear, like, it's... Maybe it's just me, but like as a woman, it's I have this feeling of just like frustration of just like, why were people just so against including women? Like, we've seen it throughout history, you know, and, you know, I think we even see it today in a lot of ways. But like, it's just, it's frustrating to see people who are just so like anti, like including women in the fraternity. And it's, you know, I think that's just it's historical. It happens all the time in all different kinds of fields and all different, you know, situations. But I think that like that frustration is still there. It's just like, we just want to be accepted. We just want to be included. Like, you know, we're just as good as anybody else, but it, you know, it's like, oh, well, you're a woman, so you're different. And that's such a frustrating thing to deal with. But like,
I don't know how to wrap my head around it either. Like, obviously it's a lot different because we experience a lot of trying to uphold that in our day and age. And this is like we were talking about, like, for us, it feels like a long time ago. It is multiple decades even before we were born. But like, here we are still trying to uphold this. But like, for us, it doesn't make sense how it didn't make more sense back then.
Yeah. Like, it's beautiful to see now, like, the inclusion in the fraternity, the immersion, and how, like, we don't even look, you know, at male or female or non-binary. Like, we don't, that's not something we pay attention to. Like, we accept people just because they're people who love music. And it's great to see that now, but it's just like, why wasn't it a thing? You know, like you said, it's hard to understand why it wasn't understood, you know, back then. But it was a different time in the world. But I always, anytime people talk about anything with like women in history, there's always that just frustration. I'm just like, you just want to like, what's wrong? Why? Why?
Yeah, pretty much.
I don't know. Maybe that's just me, but.
No, it is. It goes along with, I mean, there's an overarching umbrella of similar things, right, in the world. And just in general, it just blows my mind how.
It used
to be a lot easier.
There are a lot of things that I feel like, especially now more so than, you know, whenever this was happening, that, like, there are some things that just don't need to be gendered anymore. Like, I know, for me personally, I'm a brother in a fraternity, which is already a thing. I also have a degree in a male-dominated field. And that same. Is, I've had personal experiences. A lot of, I was not the only girl in my program, fortunately. Whenever I was going through my program, one of my best friends, she, is also a brother. She's had her own experiences from me, but we've both had experiences where simply because we are women, we have either been, you know, talked down to, or like, like one of the instances is like in live sound, a lot of times it's really easy for a guy to, even if he has less experience, than you, to assume you don't know what you're doing and be like, oh, here, let me teach you how to roll this cord up. It's like, I have a whole degree in this. I know what I'm doing. And it's, like, there's just some things I feel like they definitely don't need to be gendered anymore. One of the things, though, that I will say, that I am happy about, at the tail end of the summary, the fraternity voted to officially refer to all members as brothers. There's something about being called a brother that just makes like a happy little thing in my chest like flutter around. And there's one of the lines in the hymn where we all go, I am a brother, that it makes my heart go like doodle doot, like my heart feels happy saying that. And it's, I'm honestly, because I hear more, I've heard it a little bit more now where some people have wanted to be, I've heard it more so, I think, on the Tau Beta side, where some of the male members that have joined the sorority have said that they don't want to be called a sister. They would prefer to be called a brother. And I've heard that have been a discussion. I have not heard that on the KSI side, though.
Interesting.
Which is kind of strange to me, because in my head, whenever we talk about KSI and being a brother, like, the word brother in my head doesn't have a gender connotation. Being a brother is being a brother, and it's just something that you are. Whereas this discussion that I have heard about it on the sorority side of things is, it being a sister still feels like it's a gendered thing. And I'm not a sister, and I'm not in any way, but I wonder how that kind of why that distinction still feels like it is still there. Right. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does.
Yeah, there's like that connotation for some reason that, you know, it's interesting. I don't know a lot of people in Tau Beta Sigma. I specifically, you know, male identifying people in the sorority. So I haven't really heard those conversations, but
I've heard it a little bit from the, not exclusively from the Tau Beta chapter from my home, that was like the, from my home school. Mm-hmm. But I heard it a little bit there, but I also heard it some at Southwest District Convention, where it's like someone that is a member or that is a sister say like, oh, I'm or they like are talking about someone else that's a sister and saying, oh, brother so-and-so, and they're a Tau Beta member, not a KSI member.
Interesting.
A little bit of a tangent there.
Yeah. All right, jumping into summary of part four. In the early 2000s, significant strides were made toward gender inclusion in Kappa Kappa Psi, particularly with the experiences of women like Laura DePuyter and Arwen Childs. DePuyter, a percussionist and computer science major, became the first female member of the Lambda chapter at the University of Arkansas in 2002. Her decision to join was driven by her desire to continue working with the band, especially in equipment management. Despite Lambda's tradition of only accepting male members, DePuyter's passion for service to the band led chapter president Daniel Beatty to offer her a bid, although the decision was met with mixed reactions from alumni. DePuyter's journey was marked by equal treatment in the membership education process, where she participated fully alongside her male peers. Similarly, Arwen Childs faced challenges when she joined the Delta Sigma chapter at the University of Texas at Arlington in 2000, becoming one of the first women to join the chapter. Although some older members and alumni disapproved, Childs persisted and was welcomed by the majority of the chapter, later becoming chapter treasurer. Melinda Matney's experience in Kappa Kappa Psi highlights the evolving roles of women in leadership within the fraternity. Matney, initiated into Tau Beta Sigma in 1984, broke barriers when she became the first woman to serve as district governor in Kappa Kappa Psi in 1991. She continued to face challenges and gender-based discrimination, but her leadership roles within both Kappa Kappa Psi and Tau Beta Sigma were crucial in shaping the fraternity's policies and outlook toward women. Despite the backlash from some men and women who felt threatened by her leadership, Matney's contributions helped further integrate women into the fraternity, particularly when she was elected as Kappa Kappa Psi's Vice President of Programs in 1995. Her leadership not only advanced the fraternity's progress, but also exposed the lingering issues of gender discrimination that women continued to face, even as they took on leadership roles. The article emphasizes the ongoing evolution of gender inclusion within Kappa Kappa Psi. Historically, the fraternity restricted membership to white males and actively opposed Title IX, which required gender equity in educational institutions. However, over time, attitudes have shifted, with more women joining both Kappa Kappa Psi and Tau Beta Sigma and taking on leadership roles. Despite progress, some chapters still resist gender-inclusive recruitment, believing it would undermine the bond of the brotherhood or that Tau Beta Sigma sufficiently serves female members. This attitude is increasingly seen as outdated and damaging to the fraternity's values of leadership and education, with the call for chapters to embrace open recruitment policies. The article concludes by reflecting on the significant strides made, yet recognized that the stigma of discrimination persists in some areas, overshadowing the fraternity's achievements.
I've talked about this before a little bit. My chapter was one of those ones that I don't know if they explicitly were like, you know, no, we only want to let men in because that, you know, but my chapter did not have its first female member until 2007, I think.
Wow.
Yeah, she later became chapter president a couple years down the line, but that it's almost 30 years that went by before a female member was in my home chapter. Now, I know when I was active, our chapter was more women than men. My freshman year, though, the chapter was majority men. So I think there's been some shifts over the years, depending on, you know, enrollment and whatnot. But having personally experienced one of the chapters that was like that, it's insane that, you know, 30 years went by before before, you know, women are allowed to be. But now,
of course,
30 years is crazy.
Right. I'm looking at some of the numbers there. Sorry, Sav. Looking at some of the numbers, like when we were talking about Melinda Matney, and like, oh, I know this is more towards me, but it could still be seen for you too. Like, these are years like around when we were born. Like, basically, our entire lives were when these things started becoming more of a reality, which I think for me puts it into perspective. Because it's not, that's what makes the distinction between my age and like hearing 50 years is like, that actually wasn't too long ago. That really was just like right around the corner. And you know, how far we've come in that time, it's like an explosion of positive inclusivity. That's like the connection that I'm making as I'm, you know, learning about this alongside.
So I think it's
for you. Yeah, go ahead, Sav.
I was just going to say, I think it's like interesting the different perspectives, because we all come from like different aged chapters. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, we've talked about before, my chapter is a baby chapter, mm-hmm. you know, 2017. So when my chapter formed and when I, you know, became a brother, like there were females in the chapter. That wasn't something like that had ever not existed, right. mm-hmm. you know, for us. And so it's kind of interesting. Like, Mark, we talked about, you know, Beta Omicron tonight, and it's like, you know, there was a time where your chapters did not have women in them, and, you know, went through, like, you guys have that history of going through that, you know, to integrate women into the chapters and stuff. And it's just kind of surreal to think about, because I'm like, wow, you know, like, I'm grateful that I didn't experience, you know, that specifically, you know, that pushback specifically, because my chapter, you know, we were like, yes, right. we love the women in the chapter. Come on, you know, like, it's just different that we have all those kind of like perspectives.
I do think so. My chapter does recruitment weird. basically, the way that recruitment is done from my home chapter, because this is how our director of bands wants things run, if your name is on the marching band roster, you get a bid from both organizations, regardless of if you've shown interest, if anything. Everybody gets a bid. If you turn it back in, is up to you. There will be brothers that will reach out and be like, hey, you should really consider joining. Like, you know, the people that we think would be best to be like, hey, like, we really, like, we want you. Like, you should consider turning your bid in. Like, we do that. But no, everyone gets a bid. So the director of bands that has been at WT, he's been there for a while. I don't really know what recruitment looked like prior to that, though. I'm assuming it was probably still split where, like, I'm curious, at least for my home chapter's history, like, how that recruitment process had changed because of how we had to, my train of thought is train of thoughting, and it's just not exiting my face.
No, I'm picking up what you're putting down.
Okay.
Yeah. Because your chapter was a little before mine, right? In terms of
1946 or 47. 47, yeah, so I think.
A couple years before mine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My chapter really is a baby.
Oh, he's so cute. Him, though. It's so I love cute. Them. It's so cute.
So for both of you, since we've talked about it, your thoughts and your experiences personally, as both women in Kappa Kappa Psi and obviously the hosts of this podcast, we wanted to talk about your unique perspectives, and your experiences within the fraternity. So your journeys have not only reflect personal growth, but obviously connect to the broader history of inclusivity and representation in the fraternity. So in order to further explore this, there have been some questions that have been put together to highlight your experiences, perspectives on inclusivity, and just overall thoughts on the progress of women in the fraternity. I guess I can just helm kind of.
You're emceeing these questions,
Mark. Yeah, emceeing these questions off to you, and then we can kind of figure it out. So let's look at personal journeys. I think we can combine this into one thought. We've talked about like what initially drew us to the fraternity. So let's dive like past that question, and say what made you feel like this was the right place for you, and did you encounter like resistance or hesitation, like being a woman in the fraternity, either from outside members or just from inner struggles?
Yes and no. So I'm from the South. Gendered things are still way bigger in the South than the South would like to admit. So whenever I got to college, my freshman year, I was like, okay, there's a fraternity, there's a sorority, they do similar things. Being in the sorority would make sense. However, the fraternity at the time, so my freshman year, I got a bid freshman, sophomore, and junior year. I did not turn one in until junior year. Freshman year, the chapter was mostly men, and it was huge. However, I'm also a trombone player, and I have been constantly full of sections where I was one of maybe a couple of girls. In high school, my sections were anywhere from, 8 to 15 people of trombones, and there's maybe 3 girls. So it wasn't unheard of for me to be in, mostly male spaces. The chapter at the time was mostly brass players. Brass players have a tendency to be men. It's just statistics, but the chapter was mostly men, and it was mostly brass. And brass is brass. Brass is family. So that's why I was like, whenever I was my freshman year, I'm glad I held off on joining, but also kind of regret not joining sooner. But that was one of the biggest things contributing to why I wanted to was I have friends now that are brass players that are also brothers. Like, I already am familiar with these people. I'd be cool being in an organization that they're also in. I know in like social concept or in social settings, I recognized brothers easily because they were also like most of the trombones were KSI brothers. Some of them were also brothers in PMA, but a lot of them were KSI brothers. A lot of the baritones were KSI brothers. The whole tuba section was KSI brothers. Most of the trumpets, most of the French horns, like all of brass was KSI. So it's just like.
Easy to feel like.
Yeah, it's like, oh, this is just sectionals, yeah. Man.
Right, exactly.
And that was kind of I felt like I was stuck between a rock and a hard place because I had bids for both organizations. So I was like, do I go be a sister? And, I'm from the South, so being a sister makes sense. But also, brass family? And I ended up not joining my freshman year. Sophomore year was COVID, so that was funky. But my junior year, my best friend Nadia was the year that I went to join. My best friend Nadia was the VPM at the time, and my best friend Jenna was the secretary at the time for the chapter. Most of council that year was female. Our president was non-binary. If you've met Mason Vincent, that was our chapter president at the time. I was still kind of on the fence about joining. Like, I filled out the bid and everything, and Nadia asked me in the common area in the music building we called the atrium. We were waiting for, I think, sectionals or trombone choir or something like that. And she asked me if I'd filled out the bid. And I was like, yeah, it's in my bag. And she was like, can I see it? I was like, yeah, sure. I think I filled everything out. And she's like, why haven't you turned it in? And I was like, I'll turn it in later. And she's like, no, you're mine. Give it. And then the next year, she was chapter president. I was ARO. And Jenna was historian, and it was, like, most of our council was women, except my really good friend Sean and my really good friend Cyrus. They were the only ones that weren't female on our chapter council, and a lot of the chapter at that time was women. I think it was more majority women than it was anything else.
How about yourself?
I think I answered that question.
Yeah.
No, I was like, I went on a tangent and perfect. I lost the plot.
I personally haven't really encountered any, you know, resistance or hesitation. Right. Being a woman in the fraternity. Like I said, my chapter being younger, you know, kind of was already pretty mixed. I will say, like, sometimes though, from like outside perspectives, right? Like I have friends, you know, not related to music or anything. And I'm like, yeah, you know, I have a fraternity thing. And they're like, huh? Yeah. They're like, you're in a fraternity? And I'm like, yeah, you know, it's a co-ed music fraternity. You know, do the whole spiel. And people, yeah, like, it's kind of mixed reaction. Sometimes they're like, oh, that's really cool. And then sometimes they're like, oh, I thought fraternities were for guys. And I'm like, well, you know, it's co-ed. So, like, yeah, we're, you know, it's girls and guys, but we're all brothers. Like, so sometimes, like, from outside perspectives, people kind of, like, look at you twice and they're, like, double take. They're like, huh? Like, what do you mean? But usually, you know, if you explain to them, they're just like, oh, that's pretty cool. But I've never really felt like being a woman, you know, made it weird or, like, I had to, like, do anything extra. Like, I always felt very, very welcomed. But Tori, you mentioned something that was kind of already in my head about, like, the sections and stuff, because this is something I've seen a lot, and I've said to a lot of people that, like, musical instruments don't have genders. It doesn't matter if you're a guy or a girl or non-binary. Like, you don't have to, like, girls don't have to play, you know, piccolos or clarinets, and guys don't have to be in brass. Like, you could play whatever instrument you want to play. But I love that you brought that up, because I've heard some of my music teacher friends as well say the same thing. They're like, you know, music doesn't have a gender. You can play any instrument. And I love to say that and just, like, remind people of that. It doesn't matter, you know, what you identify as and what you choose to play. Like, music is music regardless. I mean, that's my case.
Whenever I was going into, like, middle school, like, trying to figure out, like, oh, I want to play this instrument. When I was in elementary school, I wanted to be a flute girly so badly. Complete opposite direction. Once I actually started playing and, like, holding instruments and stuff, like, whenever it comes to a bass line, the darker, the heavier, the nastier that trombone line is, the happier my little heart is.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I think in sixth grade, the school that I went to was really, really small. So, the marching band, the school that I went to, it was pre-K through 12th grade in one building. It was, like, split into sections. But 8th grade through all the way up through high school was the marching band. So they started, like, beginner band was 6th grade, and 7th grade was, like, the upper band. 6th grade, though, was whenever they had to, like, still split by instruments and, like, or not instruments, by sections, because how small it was. My beginner class, there was 8 of us. Like, I think there was 3 trombones, 3... baritones and 2 tubas. Like, we were a really small class. And my one of the first things that my teacher taught me, he was also a trombone player, he taught us how to play Smoke on the Water. Which is, like, such a brass thing to learn how to play, but it was, like, that was, like, just dipping your toe into, like, a fun thing to play, and it just kind of went from there.
That's awesome. So I do want to segue into that, because how you described music and instruments not having a gender salve is interesting. And I want to ask you how you think, how do you define brotherhood? Because we talk about Kappa Kappa Psi, and we talk about how everyone is called a brother regardless of gender. The concept of brotherhood is so deeply ingrained in the fraternity. How do you think that applies to all of its members, regardless of gender? gender.
To me, when I talk about brotherhood, like brotherhood is, it is love. It is being seen. It is being heard. And I say that because, like, my brothers have been there for me through so many things. Like, you know, I became a brother in 2020, you know, still in college. I'm now out of college. Like, I've moved different places around the country. I've taken new career paths. Like, so much in life has changed, but brotherhood does not change, you know? And if I were to call, you know, some of my brothers up for anything, just to talk, or just if I needed someone, if I needed something, they would show up, you know, even like you guys, or like, you know, the comms committee. Like, if something's going on in your life, you could just say that. And even though we're all apart from each other in different parts of the country, like, we would still be there, be like, what can we do to help? What do you need? You know, how can we support you? And that, to me, is brotherhood. And it's that feeling when, you know, you're out randomly in public, maybe you're traveling or something, and you see someone with letters, or you see that, like, sticker on someone's car, and you're just, like, immediately connected to somebody. You don't even know them. You don't know their story. You don't know their name, maybe, but you're connected by something that's bigger than yourself. And that's something beautiful around the country, anywhere you go. I mean, we've even seen it in meeting grounds. You know, people, they're like, hey, I'm traveling across the country, or I'm going to this concert, or I'm, you know, whatever the case may be. Anyone want to hang out? Anyone? And everyone's like, oh, if you need somewhere to crash, like, my couch is available. Like, you know, they say don't help random people off the internet, but it's like, that doesn't apply to brothers, right? Like, it's that connection. It's that, like, it's that love that just, it's never going to change. Like, that to me is what brotherhood means. And that doesn't have a gender. Love does not have a gender, you know? I mean, it doesn't matter whether I call one of my brothers who's a female or a male or non-binary, they're all going to love the same exact way. And that, to me, is the best part about brotherhood.
Is there anything else that you guys wanted to add in? I know we have some questions on the side, but there's been moments where we kind of talk over it and kind of figure it out. But what are your thoughts after just listening to this experience? Have you been able to find relations to the history of what has happened, like relations, similar experiences? Or
one thing I will say, like, I know that this can be a controversial topic to talk about, and I, you know, I know one of the questions talks about, you know, how, what we've seen in the fraternity over time and what our hopes are for the future and of the fraternity as far as, you know, women. And, like, I just want to say, like, I have so much respect for all of the women who have paved the way in the fraternity for us today. Like, I would not be a brother in this fraternity if it wasn't for the women that, you know, we listed. Like,
yeah.
And I'm so grateful for that, because this fraternity has played such a big role in my life. I mean,
absolutely.
It will forever. Forever. Like, this fraternity has done more for me than I could even put into words. Yeah. And that never would have been possible without these amazing women who have done so much work and probably dealt with a lot emotionally and mentally and been told a lot of really mean things, you know, like, so thank you for that, you know, like, and I, you know, really hope to meet, you know, some of these women that are still around that played, like, a pivotal role. Like, I would love to just meet them and say, like, you are an amazing woman and I appreciate you. And, you know, the fraternity has made a lot of changes in the last few years. I mean, just being more gender inclusive, being more aware of our brothers, especially our non-binary brothers, because, you know, they need to be seen as well. And I know there's a lot of people in the fraternity that might not like some of the things that we say, and that's totally okay. You know, we are all entitled to our opinions, but at the end of the day, love and respect, it doesn't matter. We will all love and respect each other, you know, in this fraternity. And it's nice to see leadership that thinks that same way. Leadership that wants to protect, you know, every single brother and make sure that they feel safe and welcome. This is a safe space for everybody. Music is a safe space. Music is a universal language. You know, we've said that thousands of times. And I think there's a lot of work to be done in the world in general. And so in turn, you know, with as things change in the world, things will change within the fraternity. But I think we have made some really great strides. And I'm really proud. Like I can definitely say I'm proud to be in an organization that, you know, supports women, supports our brothers of color, supports, you know, it just supports everyone for exactly who they are. And I'm really proud of that. So shout out to Kep Kep Sai. You done good, kid. Before we wrap up the episode, we do have a few quick announcements. We'd like to remind you that we are in election season for both Kappa Kappa Psi and the Kappa Kappa Psi Alumni Association. We are proud to announce that we have 13 outstanding candidates for the Alumni Association Board of Directors. Even more exciting, the Tempo will be home to interviews with each AABOD candidate. So if you're listening, be sure to hit that subscribe button to stay up to date with these episodes. All interviews will be released weekly throughout April. Elections will be held on May 1st, 2025, so please renew your membership by April 25th, 2025 to ensure your eligibility to vote. Side note, I'm doing all of these interviews, so yeah, you guys are going to hear me talk a lot in the next month, so I really hope our listeners enjoy my voice.
Wait, is it just you?
It is just me taking over the interviews. You guys get a month off.
Nuh-uh.
Silent cheers. Well, yeah, Tori doesn't. Tori Mark gets to edit. Congratulations, go away, Mark. You have won. The little dancey dance. Oh, my goodness. We are also currently in convention season. So if you're attending any of the district conventions, please take pictures and send them to aacommunications@kksi.org. We want to post your pictures. And I believe we're going to be doing district takeovers as well. Finally, we encourage you to check out all of our past episodes of The Tempo because they're awesome. So go check us out.
And it's free.
It's free.
Oh, free.
As always, we'd like to extend a special thanks to the National Alumni Association and Kappa Kappa Psi, National Honorary Band Fraternity, for making this podcast possible. We hope everyone has had an amazing March. Happy Women's History Month, and thanks for tuning in.
Have a wonderful day, and as always, A.
E.
A.